Albert Nirenberg is a filmmaker in Toronto. Some time ago, he saw a documentary about intelligence, thought the film was really boring. At that moment, he had an epiphany. He suddenly realized that stupidity would make for a much more interesting documentary. So Nirenberg has made a film about stupidity called Stupidity. Nirenberg talked with Steve Paulson about his documentary.
What this film is about essentially isn't just stupidity in the sense of people who can't help the fact that they're dumb. It's not about those people. It's more about smart people being stupid. And you can extend the metaphor to humanity as a culture, as a species that could be so intelligent, deciding instead to be stupid. So we're into willful stupidity. And Adam Sandler is sort of a great example, because what Adam Sandler's career has kind of revealed incidentally by accident in sort of indirect ways is what a smart guy he is. He has such a good sort of insight in terms of what audiences want, what people laugh at. He has a good feel for the sort of average American. And so the guy is obviously very smart. And so you ask yourself the question, why, when he plays roles in his films, does he always choose or almost always choose to play stupid, literally characters that almost seem mentally challenged or retarded? He plays them on purpose for humorous effect or for insight. And so he's an interesting study in willful stupidity in terms of he seems to get ahead. He uses stupidity to get ahead in his life and in his career. And I would say that the Adam Sandler effect, using stupidity to get ahead in life, is all over North American culture. It's in every aspect of our culture. People dumbing up, so to speak. Not dumbing down, dumbing up.
The one man who embodies the lowest common denominator is Hollywood superstar Adam Sandler.
What was that, Billy?
I said, reading is good. Are you some damned moron?
He'd been doing a very good job of concealing it until he made Punch Drunk Love, and then we realized, no, actually, this guy's a lot smarter than any of us really thought he was.
Most of you are saying, hey, any idiot could do that. Well, it was tough for me, so back off!
It's actually a very complicated subject, what we're talking about, sort of trying to get at the real meaning of stupidity or sort of
what it's full of irony.
It is, yeah. Well, and there's also, there's this book that came out by a psychologist named Robert Sternberg called Why Smart People Do Stupid Things.
That's right.
What's your take on that?
Everyone knows there's a lot of stupid people in the world. There's no surprise in that. The amazing thing, I think what's new, the new research is indicating that people that we traditionally thought were very smart, or the way we thought about intelligence and stupidity, and that we used to think that intelligence and stupidity are somehow opposites. So if you're really intelligent, then you can't be stupid. Well, in fact, it's not true. In fact, some of the stupidest people are the most intelligent. That's what's shocking. And in fact, the mixture of stupidity and intelligence is incredibly explosive. You get the most potent, powerful forms of stupidity when you mix stupidity with intelligence. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we usually think that really smart people aren't stupid. And what Robert Sternberg's book proved is that some of the smartest people are the stupidest. And that's a surprise, because I think that people who consider themselves intellectuals or university graduates somehow imagine themselves on some level, you know, by virtue of this degree I've got on the wall, I'm somewhat immune to stupidity, when in fact, you look at the statistics, and if anything, the opposite is true. Smarter people, by virtue of thinking that they're immune to stupidity, often are stupider.
Give me an example of that.
Well, I would say you look at politicians, you look at governments, you look at terrorists. Terrorists, in a lot of cases, are people that have, I would say, strangely enough, good brains, but they have extremely stupid strategies, often self-destructive. So that's one example. Bill Clinton, the president of the United States, former president of the United States, was seen as being a very intelligent man who made some very classically stupid mistakes.
Well, let's turn our attention to the current president of the United States, George W. Bush. Here's a clip from your documentary. This is Mark Crispin Miller, author of a book called The Bush Dyslexicon.
We have a president who prides himself on his bluntness. He therefore exults in certain propositions.
This will be a monumental struggle of good versus evil.
That don't add up. They don't make sense, but they sound firm.
And this is a struggle between good and it's a struggle between evil.
The media will not raise any of the rational questions that real journalists would raise for a rational population of citizens of a democracy. For example, the axis of evil.
An axis of evil.
Bush used that phrase against the wishes of many of the people around him. He liked it, liked the sound of it. He may not know what the actual Axis was back in World War II. The evidence suggests that he doesn't know. It doesn't matter, he liked the sound of it. Three nations, evil, all working together, fine.
That's a clip from your film Stupidity. And it's worth pointing out that you are a Canadian, and this question of whether George W. Bush is stupid actually became quite an issue in Canada a while back. And an aide to your prime minister called President Bush a moron, and Prime Minister Chrétien stood up for Bush. Can you tell me about this flap?
Basically, what happens is, you know, at a NATO conference in Czechoslovakia, the head of communications, which essentially is like the Ari Fleischer of Canada, says, "What a moron," basically, while the president is making a speech. Now, it becomes a huge controversy. A newspaper here picks it up. I guess it goes around the world in various ways. And it sort of rekindles the issue of whether or not the president of the United States is stupid. Now, the interesting thing about it is that, yes, later she is forced to resign. I think she's under tremendous pressure to do it. And, you know, it's a kind of controversial situation because it was, I think she felt it was a private conversation. And imagine if all of us had the things that we said privately to somebody standing next to us publicized internationally. I think it would affect our all of our jobs. But it sort of raised the issue. And I know there was sort of some resentment and anger from sort of the American point of view, which is that there they go again insulting our...
How can you call our president a moron? I mean, yes, that doesn't seem very nice.
The answer to that, first of all, is tell that to David Letterman and Jay Leno. I mean, they continue to essentially call the president a moron in some capacity almost every night. And it's just a subject of massive sort of humor. But now what I think is interesting is let's get into the issue directly. The issue of, you know, whether or not the president is a moron. Well, see, what our film says is that we don't say that he's a moron. In fact, technically speaking, he can't be a moron. Why? Because the term originates as an IQ test result. I'm quite sure that George Bush scored higher than between 50 and 75 on his IQ tests. Otherwise, he could not have gotten into Yale or Harvard, which he did. In fact, I would say the more interesting question about Bush is, how can a guy who has degrees from both Harvard and Yale be so commonly perceived as stupid? That's itself intriguing. Second of all, I would say that what's sort of interesting about him as a president is that I don't think that he is actually stupid, but I do think, like Adam Sandler, like Jim Carrey, you might say, he's an expert at playing dumb. He actually, I think, does it on purpose. And that's what our film says, is that, in fact, he's very much like Adam Sandler and that he's built his career as sort of allowing himself to be misunderestimated, as he might say.
Well, I'll tell you my take on when George W. actually overtook Al Gore in the presidential campaign was it was right after the first debate they had, because everyone was predicting that Gore was going to demolish him. He was the smart guy. He was an experienced debater, and no one gave Bush much of a chance, and he held his own, and then Gore was considered this bully, and it's sort of from that moment onward, it seemed like George W. Bush was ahead in the race, and it seemed to be very much a case of diminished expectations.
That's right. He succeeded using a policy of don't expect too much, and then he comes through in a reasonable way, and people laud him as a genius, and that's an interesting tactic, and a lot of people use that. He uses it very well, and I think that so sometimes when people call him stupid, they end up, first of all, when you call anyone stupid, you sometimes end up looking stupid yourself, and it ends up essentially being self-defeating. And in this case, unless you're pointing out real examples of ignorance, which there have been, then I think you kind of look bad when you do that. And so I think it was definitely a mistake on her part, and it was definitely a mistake in her career to do that, though many people have lauded her in Canada and elsewhere as a hero. For sort of saying only what a lot of people think. But you see, what our film is sort of about, too, is not so much that, you know, we're not so much interested in just people being stupid. We're interested in people being deliberately stupid and why they do it. And that's a really interesting, tough question. So the president of the United States, again, you get the example, being the so-called creator of the internet, as Al Gore was sometimes called, you know, a guy who's connected to very intellectual things, I think became a huge disadvantage. And that's an ongoing tragedy in this world, which is the worst thing that could happen to you is people could call you smart. And that would be essentially a libel. You know, it's the end of your career being publicly known as being intelligent.
Or being an egghead is what it is.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's the egghead slur. But I would say that now it's become more generalized. People don't have to come out and call you an egghead. They just have to suggest that you've read a lot of books. You know, that guy's read a lot of books. I think he's suspicious.
Now, most of the response to your film has been amazingly positive. Are you surprised that a documentary about stupidity would become such a hit?
Yes, I am surprised. One reason why I was surprised is that one of the big parts of this film is saying that the media is stupid. So I was amazed that, you know, when media people would watch this, they would then declare that they loved it or that it amused them a lot or whatever, because it's saying that they're stupid. I mean, we're not saying that the media is itself a stupid medium, but I'm a newspaper reporter. I worked in radio and I worked in television. And one of the things that struck me, which was like the media's dirty little secret, was that every media organization, when they hire an employee on air or for print, will give them a kind of a working concept of what they're doing. And they always say something like, think of your audience as being 12 years old. Or imagine, and I'm serious about this, that you're talking to 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds or grade 9. And I'm talking about major newspapers, major television networks, telling the reporters to imagine that their audience are a bunch of idiots. And why do they do this? Because they believe that the more you imagine your audience are idiots and the more you talk to them like they're idiots, the more you seem to succeed. That is the model. Now, what's interesting to me and what we say in the film is that, yes, that's one model. If you talk to people like they're idiots, they'll start to act like idiots and they'll glom onto you like a bunch of idiots, more or less. But there's also been successful models of talking to people as if they're intelligent. And what I think is a critical issue here is that media, in a lot of cases, opted, meaning television, I don't think, is by its nature a stupid medium. But early on in its development, big parts of the television industry opted to go stupid. So we look back and we assume, oh, it's always been a dumb medium. It wants to be dumb. Same thing with cinema. I think cinema, by its very nature, is an incredibly intelligent medium. It's working in several media at the same time. It's beautiful. It has huge amounts of visual space. It actually really wants to be smart, but we keep making it dumb. And again, it's that option. People have learned, okay, it was easier for me to make that dumb movie. I made more money making that dumb movie. And so we choose stupidity, ultimately. So to answer your question, I was amazed at, you know, how successful the film has been and how it's being received and how popular it was. But I think that what I felt coming from it was that I thought that a lot of people in the media probably are fed up with playing stupid, just like everybody else. You asked me at the beginning of the interview, what was my motivation for playing the film? Well, the emotional motivation as a media person was that I was tired of playing stupid. I was tired of dumbing down the language I used to write in newspapers. I was tired of having to use street English in every situation on radio, even when it wasn't appropriate. And I just thought, you know, what happens to you when you dumb yourself down for so long is that you forget that you've been dumbing yourself down. And one day you arrive at a moment and you're like, hey, I really am dumb now. I've succeeded. And so that really emotionally was what motivated me to make this film.
Albert Nuremberg made the documentary film Stupidity. He spoke with Steve Paulson. We, by the way, think you're a very intelligent audience. Or was that a stupid thing to say?